You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardner, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
Found like 12 tracks in the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
Oh, yeah.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. Jim, he's going to the right. He's going into the tree right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmargen, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical when I came out here. I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced that I have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Alice knows what you think I've seen. Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side of his knee, and he was talking to Mox and Joe.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Discardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Hey, buddy, I'm doing great. This road warrior just keeps on keeping on, man. I mean, we've been gone 30 hours straight, got to our first destination, met with our fine friends, our fine folk from over the pond. And it's been a roller coaster ever since. We haven't stopped. As we speak to you now, we are on the roll. They're filming us in the cab of the rig. Okay? We have not stopped 1 minute.
Wow.
It's been exciting as hell, okay? We've done interviews with newspapers. We've done interviews with the crew here that's come over the pond. They're shaking their head, thinking to themselves, oh my God, did I believe what I just heard from these people here? They've seen things here that they haven't seen anywhere. But you know what? They're here in the right place. They're here with me and the boys, and we're traversing the United States of America to bring out the truth. And that's what it's all about, my brother.
That's it, buddy. That's it.
You know, so much has happened since our last show. And forgive me out there, ladies and gentlemen, this is L-I-V-E, live, as you'll ever see. But we're going through mountains right now, so if I push you and I try to get back in and I don't, Marco, you're going to have to continue on the show, and I'm just giving my sympathies out to all my loyal listeners, because we go out to just so many people. And how many countries do we go out to now, Marco?
34.
34 countries are listening to us right now. Incredible. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know, the big news of the week has been about Dr. Melba Ketchum. Would she show or would she not show at the Hanobia Bigfoot Conference? And I told everybody, no show. And guess what happened? It was a no show. And I hear what's going around, that her psychic advisor had advised her not to show up because bad things would happen. Who's our first guest, Marco?
Well, it's going to be Scott. And he's on and ready to go.
Let's get him on. Scott, you there?
I'm here.
How are you, brother?
I'm doing okay.
Well, you know, I think there was just two people in the cryptid world that was saying the same story and sang the same tune about Dr. Ketchum. Do you remember who those two people were?
Well, I believe it was you and me.
You believe right. Yes, indeedy. You know, it's a shame. But that's okay. It was a good thing because we won our bets. It's a bad thing that she didn't show up. But you know what? Forget about these nothings, because let's go on to a more positive note. Let's let everybody know about that wonderful book of yours that's out.
Oh, well, I wrote it 3 years ago. It's taken 3 years to get it from my computer onto a publisher's desk and out there in the field for people. But Cryptid Creatures of Florida is now available. And Amazon's got it. Barnes & Noble has got it. There's at least a dozen booksellers on the Internet out there that have it. And it's starting to sell pretty good. From what the publisher tells me, so you know, I'm happy to hear that. But for all of the fans that are going to be in the Orlando area this weekend, I'll be at Spooky Empire at the author tables signing books if people want to pick them up there, or if they've got a copy already and they would like me to autograph the book, I'm happy to do so.
That's wonderful. Hey, listen, you know, you and I got a date later on this month. As a matter of fact, it's next week sometime, and don't forget to bring my autograph copy.
I will. That's Tuesday. We're going to be meeting up in Carabel, Florida at the Franklin Inn.
Announce it to the world. Let have everybody come out to see us.
Well, it won't hurt. It won't hurt. I mean, if they want to show up, let them show up.
If they want to see the real cryptid and Bigfoot researches, we invite you people. Let's see if you've got the balls enough to show. You heard where he said it's going to be Carabel, Florida. It's going to be next Tuesday, the 11th, folks. It converges on the Franklin Inn. We're going to meet there, and then we're going out to Tate's Hell Swamp. Come out and see if you got the gumption to do it. You'll get to meet me, and you'll get to meet Scott Marlowe, amongst a few others that are coming out. So if you want to get out of the fantasy world and the delusional world of behind that computer, you come and join us. You'll be with the real deal, and you'll see how we do what we do best. What else has been going on, brother? Talk to me.
Oh, my Lord. Well, my kid's doing great. He's up there in Panama City, which isn't going to be too far away from where we'll be, working with Big Cats and Jim Fowler and Jim Broadus at Bear Creek Feline Center. So, and they're talking to me and him now about him staying on another 3 months. So he's doing a really good job up there. But
I'm so proud of him, especially working with Jim Fowler. There's a man. That guy's an institution in the feline industry.
Absolutely. And, Robert's really getting a great baptism up there. And then, of course, I checked out the Bayport sighting, and I pretty much determined from what I've been told from eyewitnesses up there that they had, you know, what the commercial crabbers were seeing was a couple of bears raiding their crab traps, not Bigfoot. But, you know, we need the truth, and we got to do the research. But I'm working on a story about an African lion that's loose in Levy County, a sea monster that's loose at the mouth of the Suwannee River, and, of course, the black Florida panther, which is up in the Carabel area, too, that we've been working on. So there's quite a bit of cryptid mystery going on around here right now.
You know, I just heard something that just came over the airwaves about another 16-foot of python that they just got.
Yep.
Unbelievable. Yep. These things are coming out of the woodwork. Every week.
Well, we've had a pretty hot summer, and the weather agrees with them. We just got to hope we have a cold the winter, or we're going to wind up having problems up here in Orlando, because they're spreading like wildfire.
So they're going that far, huh?
Well, they expect that they're up here now, but you know, last winter had a very, very cold winter, and that probably did them in, unless they found a really nice warm place. But you know, we've had some problems with them up here. But most of the problems appear to have been escaped exotic pets and not ones that are breeding in the wild. But it's not hard for them to get up here, Tom. All they got to do is go up Shark Valley into the Okeechobee area, up through the Indian Reservation and up the Kissimmee River Valley. It wouldn't be very difficult for that to happen.
Yeah, that's some amazing area. We've spent a lot of time, especially at the Okeechobee. And not only there, but out there in the Land of a Thousand Islands. That place just blew me away.
Oh, yeah. And that's a really cool area to work, but you got to do that in the winter, because if they're down there, that's when they're there.
What's on the future? What's on the horizon for you, Brother Scott?
Well, working on several things. We've got our little meeting to promote ecotourism and what we're doing up in the Tatel area, Carabel. This coming week, and then in November, we're hosting another Bigfoot expedition that's going to be down in the Big Cypress area, but not in Big Cypress Park. It's in a private area that I know. And then, of course, I'm working all these other sightings that come in. Most of them turn out to be nonsense, as you well know. If you haven't been punked once or twice in this business, you haven't been in the business. So. You know, that happens, and I'm also working on the Dixie Demon story. There haven't been any recent sightings. The last one was about a year ago up in Old Town, Florida, but that's Florida's version of the Mothman, only this one's a little more violent. It doesn't seem to be a portent of any omen of bad things about to happen. It just doesn't seem to like mobile homes.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. I don't think the people really understand what goes into a lot of these research areas and how we approach it in our own different ways. And you know what? I'm glad that you did invite these people. And you know what? The more the merrier, the more eyes, the more hands, the more legs we got out there can sure get the job done a lot quicker and easier. And I applaud you for that. I didn't even think about that because I'm so engulfed in what we're doing now that, to be honest with you, I really haven't had that much time because of our hot spots that we got going on here where we're at in our next couple of states. Oh, my God, it's incredible. It's just every day something's new developing in a positive way. Oh, by the way, I've been hearing that in New Mexico they're seeing pterodactyls and T-Rexes. What's going on?
Well, I've heard that story, too. I'm not sure that I buy it, but, I've been shown a couple of videos that are questionable in terms of track evidence and other things, but, hey, you know, if somebody wants me to come out and take a look, all they got to do is pick up my ticket and pay me to come out there, and I'll be happy to do it.
There you go. But either that or it's a little bit too much fire water on the reservation. What do you think?
Well, you never know. You never know. Lord knows we got enough of that in Bigfootdom too. Not just hunting extinct reptiles. Lord knows I've had a few people from famous Bigfoot organizations trying to crash my party.
I hear you. Well, you know what, Scott? It's always a delight to have you on the show, and thank you so much for being there with us. We got a couple of more listeners out here, or more people contributing. But just mute yourself out. Maybe I'll call you back on here. I'm going traversing these hills, these roads, these back roads.
Well, you just
here
be careful you don't take a wrong turn, wind up careening down one of those mountains.
Okay, buddy. We'll try to do that. And thanks for
take
for
care.
Helping out there. Okay, take care, buddy. Thank you. Marco?
Yes.
Let's go to commercial.
Here we go.
Come on, man.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot Hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage. Available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
Well, Thomas, back to you.
Okay, good buddy. Let's talk to Jim Dawson in Arkansas. Is he there?
He's right
hey.
Here.
Hey, Jimmy,
hey,
how are you?
Hey, Tom. Hey, Marco. How you guys doing?
Good. Hey, by the way, we're getting a pound of butter before we get there.
Awesome. I've got some ribeyes for us, baked potatoes, salad. Can't wait for you guys to get here.
That's incredible. Well, you know what? I got to tell you something. The Brits from over the pond are listening, and they says, "Hey, Tom, can you get them to tell us about the railroad spikes?" I said, "Okay, before we get there, he'll tell you the story right now. Why don't you be kind enough to tell all of our listeners out there?"
Sure. Well, my son Jack and I have been working, just going around looking at different areas, and there are a lot of tree breaks, there are a lot of formations, there's a lot of different stuff that's around in this area. We found some footprints, but no toes with the footprints, just large footprints. But the soil is very dry and loamy. You know, we haven't had a lot of rain this year, and so it's been again very dry. So, but there's a creek right that runs just within 75 yards of my house that runs into the river, right into the Spring River. And again, our house is right on the Spring River, and the railroad tracks, the Burlington Northern Railroad runs along the rivers here in Arkansas because, you know, that's the lowest point and the most level point they can put in the railroads. And so right behind our house, there's a concrete walkway, if you would, underneath the railroad tracks for the creek to go through. I mean, I call it a walkway, but it's really a kind of a spillway or a way for the creek to go underneath the railroad tracks. And just about 50 yards down from that, there's a huge rock cut. In other words, the railroad had to dynamite out a long area, about 150 yards long, and it's about 75 foot of cliff on both sides where they had to dynamite it out. We call it a rock cut, C-U-T. And so we went underneath the railroad tracks, and we've been going through there, walking through the creek bed. It's a seasonal creek, and it's dry sometimes. Sometimes when we have a lot of rain, we have a lot of water through there, but it's really a seasonal creek. And we've been going back and forth through there for a couple of weeks. Just every two or three days, we'd walk up through there. And last week, or maybe it was week before last, I guess now, we were walking back up through there, and Jack and I made a couple of big, very large X formations on the other side of the tracks away from the house, then one between the tracks in our house, and then one down by the river where I think the creatures cross the river on the waterfalls. It's shallow, so it's easy walking across the river right at the falls there. It's an easy way to get across the river. And so we made three X formations. Well, they had torn down all three of those X formations when we went back to look. And as we walked across that creek bed, it's a rock creek bed, we found an area where we walk all the time. There's a little road there, and we walked down to the creek. And right in the middle of the creek bed, we found 19 railroad spikes all in a bundle, all in one area, along with some other metal pieces. There was some threaded rods. And, you know, and for the last 20 years, the railroad has used concrete ties for the rails with metal cleats, if you would, to hold the rails down, rather than the old wooden railroad ties with the spikes to hold the railroad or hold the rails down. And so we haven't seen spikes in railroad ties in almost 20 years here. So occasionally you'll find a spike, an old railroad spike here or there, but very seldom will you ever see one. You'd be lucky to walk up and down the railroad and find one. Well, there were 19 of them in one area, all bunched up in a bunch, along again with some threaded rods, and then some of the new cleats that they used to hold down the railroad ties, and they had been left right in the creek bed, right where we walk. We'd walk through there, I'm going to say two or three times over the last, or the previous week or two, and they weren't there. And then next to last time we were up there, they were right there in the middle of the creek bed. So apparently they had been left there, obviously, for us to find, and we did, and we brought them home. I took pictures of them, and I emailed those railroad spikes. I just lined them up on the on my concrete walkway out here and took a picture of them and sent them to you and Marco Bill. Did you see the pictures of them? Are you there?
It appears that Tom might have dropped off.
Okay. Did you get those pictures, Marco?
Yes.
I don't know if you posted them on the website or not.
No, I did not yet.
Okay. But nonetheless, so the pictures of the spikes are there. Again, those tree formations had been taken out that we had made, the big X formations. They were gone. All of the, the wood that we had used, there were 8-9 foot pieces of wood. We had made these X formations. They were gone, and the wood was even gone. It was all gone, all three of them. So we made three more of them, and I put a knife in the tree. Right at the where the creek comes through the railroad tracks, right at that walkway, if you would. And I went back 3 or 4 days later, and nothing had been disturbed. The new X formations that I had made were still there. The knife was still there. But they had made an X formation down in front of my dock. I mean, literally in my front yard, they had made about a I'm going to say 3 to 4 foot pieces of wood into a big X. I mean, clearly they were stump wood. It's not wood that you would normally find laying in your yard. It wasn't wood that fell out of a tree like a limb. It was stump wood, and they made an X formation right in front of my dock down here on the river. Before I got a chance to take a picture of that X formation, my son Jack had picked up the wood and took it over to our bonfire pile. So I didn't get a chance to take a picture of that X formation, but that really blew our minds. I mean, Becky and I just couldn't believe it, because there's no one out here but us. We're 4 miles down a gravel road, and then off in a private area right on the Spring River. There's no one out here. I mean, someone could have been floating down the river and decided to get out of their canoe and make an X formation in front of my dock in my yard in the middle of at the end of September for some reason, but I doubt it.
Yes. Well, your area that you're living in right now is like a vacation place, a vacation homes, and you're the only ones there, right?
Oh yeah. There's about 5 or 6 homes. Oh, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's about 8 homes up here on the north end. And they're all very, very generous sized lots, but people are here just periodically, Marco Bill. They'll come in for a weekend, you know, here and there. There's no real schedule. And in fact, we're all second generation now. The area that I'm in, all of our parents built these homes. We all grew up around each other in the summers and saw each other over the summers. We're all from different parts of the country. Some of the guys are from Troy, Alabama. Some of them are from Memphis. Some of them are from Mississippi. Some of them are even from the Hardy area. Some of them are from just different, all different parts of the country. But no one lives here year round except me, and I only moved here on a year round basis at the very end of June. So in fact, right now there's no one out here, just myself, and that's it. And but it's really interesting that that there was an X about a 3.5-4 foot X formation made out of stump wood in the right at my dock. I mean, the stump wood didn't fall out of the trees. It was if you understand what root or stump wood looks like, it was very unusual to see that. That just blew our minds.
Well, something else that you were talking about that it raised my curiosity and was you said this. It appeared that they were leaving presents for you, and trading presents. Yeah.
Yes, the railroad spikes, and then I put a knife in the tree. And originally, I had thought that they had taken the knife. I went back up there and looked, but I was looking from the wrong angle. I didn't get out, and I didn't get off the four wheeler and walk down in the creek bed. I just looked from the trail, and it appeared that the knife was gone. And so I told you guys the knife was gone, and then 15 minutes later, I hopped on the four-wheeler and rode back up there and walked through the creek bed, and the knife was still, in fact, in the tree. Now, that was a week ago when I told you guys this. I have not been back up there. What I really try to do is not go up there every day. I don't want to disturb things every day. I want to, because normally no one, even the folks that come in here for the weekends, we don't go back up in that area. And so, it's an area where the creek splits up, and it looks like there's about five or six creeks. It's a low-lying area. And then on the other side of the railroad tracks, there's about, I'm going to say, somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 to 40,000 acres of uninhabited property on the other side of the railroad tracks from us. And so, normally all of us folks that come into the river, we walk from our house down to our docks, get in a canoe, go out on the falls, go trout fishing, and sit in our patios and visit, and that's it. We don't go back up in the woods behind the houses and stuff. And so, I felt like that if I started going up there a lot, then I would run them off. So I haven't been going up there on purpose. Now, I don't know over the last week if they've taken the knife or not taken the knife. I also took some apples, and I hung a couple of trout up in the trees, and I haven't went back up there to see if they grabbed the trout or not. But I did hang some trout on a string about 8 feet off the ground in the trees. I put some apples up there. I don't know if they've taken them or not because I haven't been up there this week at all.
What happened tonight? You said that you were getting
That was the exciting thing I was wanting to tell Tom about. Tonight I was getting wood in. It's cold. Today it was really nice. It was beautiful. It was almost 80 degrees. It might have been higher. It might have been a little bit more than 80 today. Beautiful sunny day. A little humid. But tonight it's going to be down to about 40. And so I was getting some wood in. And going to build a fire. It's still not quite cool enough in the house to build a fire, but I'm just about to build it. I've got my kindling ready. But I was getting the wood in, and I had I walked up the hill behind the house. I've got a really nice wood pile up there, and I had my my wheelbarrow. And all of a sudden, I started hearing a kind of whistle, cricket, summer sound. You've heard crickets in the summer, or
right.
Kind of like cicadas maybe, or a cricket. But this was a mixture between a cricket and a whistle, and it clearly wasn't this time of year. You don't hear that.
No, I understand.
You don't hear that at all. So I got up behind the wood pile, and I was throwing wood in the wheelbarrow, and I started hearing that. I haven't heard it before. And Becky and I were just outside a few minutes ago, and it wasn't going on again. It was just when I was up by the wood pile, and it was very, very loud. It sounded like it was within maybe 50, 60, 80 feet from me, maybe a little bit further, but it's very thick woods back in that area. And so I got the four-wheeler out. I've got a 3 million candle power floodlight or a flashlight, spotlight on a 12-volt battery on the back of the four-wheeler, and I rode around and I started looking upriver. There's some folks that told me that the creatures like to get a drink of water at night at dark. Right after the sun goes down, they like to drink water. So that's what I started doing tonight, was riding down to the river on the four-wheeler and shining that 3 million candle power floodlight or a spotlight up and down the riverbank, and I didn't see anything out there. But also that cricket sound had stopped. I call it a cricket sound. It might be might be more akin to a tree frog sound. It wasn't a normal sound that you hear out here on the river. I grew up here. My father grew up here. I mean, the house that I'm in, my mother and father built, and I've been coming to this spot on the river since I was 4 years old, and I just had my 50th birthday. So I've been coming here for 46 years, and I've never heard a sound like that before. It's kind of a mixture between a tree frog, a cricket, and a whistle. And it was very loud, and it was very much out of place. And so I don't know if it was a creature or not, but it's not anything I've ever heard before, and it hasn't happened again tonight after that happened. When you and I were talking earlier, I was telling you about it, and you were in a big rush. I wanted to tell you about it, but that's all it is. It's a kind of a cricket, tree frog, cicada mixture kind of whistle. It was just the weirdest sound, but it is not going on now. Becky and I were just outside a few minutes ago, and we didn't hear it again. But there are acorns dropping out of the trees, and I have a tin roof over the deck part of my cabin. I have a hexagonal shaped or six-sided two-story log cabin, and over the deck I have a tin roof going around the front and the side of the house. And we've just been beat to death with acorns. I have 22 hardwoods in my front yard. Most of them are oak. And, of course, you know, those acorns have been falling out of the trees. And when they hit that tin, it scares you to death. It's just, you know, acorn after acorn after acorn. And so for the last 3 weeks, these acorns have been falling very quickly. But as of the last couple of days, an acorn falls and hits the tin roof, maybe two or three a day. When I was outside just before the show started, I had about 8 or 9 acorns fall right around me out in the yard. And, again, we're back to maybe 3 acorns a day hitting that tin roof. And about 8 or 9 acorns fell right around me when I walked out in the yard. And then so I had that sound a little earlier. I've got acorns kind of landing around me. That's really cool because Tom will be here in a couple of hours, and we're going out tonight.
That's super. That's great.
So, yeah, we're planning on going out at 11 tonight. We're going to have dinner. I've got steak, baked potatoes, salad, et cetera. And then we're going out on an expedition tonight. So, oddly enough, I've got those sounds. I've got acorns getting, I believe, being thrown at me. I don't know if they could be just falling from the trees, but we'll see. But that sound was unbelievable because I've never had that before.
Wow. Well, Jim, I want to thank you for coming on, and I know you got a lot of things to do before Tom gets there. I don't want to keep you, but I'd let you go back to getting ready. But and I will probably touch base tomorrow and find out what the night brought.
Absolutely. I wish I had some kind of audio device. I'd just sit by the woodpile and record that for you because I've never heard a sound like that. Maybe someone out there, some of the listeners have heard a sound like that or something similar to it. I really do wish I would have recorded it. And if I can make it reoccur tonight, I will record it if I can find a way. And maybe we can play it on the show because it's really an odd sound. It's just very, very out of place.
Well, that's great.
But it's going on right now. That's what's awesome. And Tom's coming into town. He's got Youngblood with him. He's got a former Navy SEAL with him. He's got the folks from...
he's got the whole group.
He's got the whole group with him, and they'll be here in a couple of hours. He said he was 150 miles out when I talked with him, and so he ought to be here in a couple of hours, and it's just the perfect... It's like everything came together at once, so I think it's going to be an awesome night.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, Jimmy, and thanks so much for sharing with us tonight. I know you were trying to get a lot of things ready before Tom came, but thanks for coming on.
One other thing I'd like to bring up, Marco Bill, is everybody's signing into the chat room, I noticed, but nobody's saying anything. It's all guest 52, 54 came in, and then guest 52, 54 left. No one's saying anything.
I don't know what the problem is.
Yeah, I don't know if people are having problems conversing or what, but it was really kind of unusual. So
the only way I could test it out was to test it out with two different screens, three different screens, three different browsers, and log in as a guest, log in as me, and log in as something else. I mean, so that's the only testing it got done prior to the show. And just prior to the show, it crashed, and I had to make a whole new, chat room about 10 minutes before the show started. So.
Well, no wonder you were in such a rush. Well, if you've looked at it, have you seen the stuff that I've typed, welcoming people or saying hello to people? Have you, it shows up on my screen. Has it showed up on yours, or have you looked?
I haven't looked. I don't have enough screens to have things on it. I mean, I've got it. I have to change it to a screen, but I got two computers and two screens. Actually, there's three computers and two screens, and I have to wobble between three different computers with a switch, and I can't keep active control of the chat room. But we'll figure that out next week. What we'll do is we'll get everybody. I'll have an email and I'll have some stuff posted on the website there of how to get registered for the chat room and all that stuff. This is a little different chat room than the other one was, and it requires I got to have a name and I got to register it and all that stuff. So
somebody came in and somebody left. Nobody.
Yeah, they've been doing it.
So I don't know if they can see or not see or what. So.
I had four or five people.
That's the problem. Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, Jim, take care, and we'll keep in touch with you.
You bet. Have a great evening. Thanks, everybody.
Take care. Bye bye. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Jim Dawson. We're going to go to a commercial break, and then we'll come back. Lee Joyner is not going to be able to make it tonight, so Jack from the East Coast, we're going to finally give you your due 25 minutes. I'll be right back, and here we go for commercial.
I want all the viewers in the world today to know that this creature is out there. I have no doubt in my mind that there is a primate, a hominoid, a biped, something that walks on two all over this country. There's an unknown species out there, and we're going to find it. We've done vocalizations. We've received something in return, answering to it. We're going to be sharing our finds with the world, because what we've got now, no one else has. And the legend carries on by the work that we've done all these years. And say it's
Bigfoot lives right now. At www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're back. I don't know if you know this. I've had it posted on the website, both websites. Recently here, there's a big promotion for Bigfoot movies, for our movies. Bigfoot Lives, Bigfoot Lives 2, The Anatomy of Bigfoot Hoax, and In the Shadow of Bigfoot. And both the cable companies, got about 50, 70 million people out there. It's going to go on pay-per-view. It's going to go on cable channels. It's going to go all different kinds of cable stuff. And then also there's a vendor that's selling, it's got over 15,000 shelves in the United States alone, and they're going to be stocking the movies. They've already written a contract to purchase several hundred thousand copies, and they're going to be posting them. And the date for this is supposed to be about 7 November, so stand by. And, of course, if you want to get them now, you certainly can. You just go up to www.shoppingforbigfoot.com, any one of the links on our sites, and take a look, and you can get the movies. Jack, I got to unmute you. I hope this works good. And here we go.
Hello, Marco Bill.
How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Well, by golly, finally, we got your day, finally.
Oh, that's fine. I'm enjoying listening to all the other guests, so that's fine. In fact, I got a question for you.
Sure.
If Jim Dawson's still listening, I wonder if we can unmute him.
He's not on now. He had to drop off. He's getting ready. He's got steaks and food and all that. What was the question?
Well, I'll just mention it on the air, and then.
Yeah.
And then maybe you guys could pass it on to Tom or whatever. I've heard what I believe to be the creatures whistling from time to time, but when I'm out in the woods. But again, you never know. I mean, unless you actually see them do it, could it have been some type of bird, you know, possibly. But, you know, when you hear movement in the forest and you believe that the creatures are around you, you have a sense that you're being watched, you know, there's certain nights where you just have that feeling and you hear things and then you hear whistles and you associate the two together.
Right.
But as far as that clicking, chirping type of sound, I've heard it several times, and I don't know if it's the same thing that he heard, but what I heard sounded sort of like tut-tut-tut-tut-tut-tut, you know, like, I don't know if I'm quite doing it right. If I was out there when I heard it, I could imitate it, but or sort of like a click, 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 you know, real fast pace, like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's the type of sound that he heard, you know, the repetitive clicking.
The only thing what he's saying is, you know, obviously we don't know what it is, but what he's saying is that, I mean, he's been in the area now for quite a long time, and he's never heard those sounds before, and so it's something new, and it's not an animal that he's aware of or that he's, especially this time of year, that he's aware of that would be there. So it's just kind of strange. It's something to look for. And so when they get out there, they're going to be looking for, you know, other forms of evidence. Obviously, you just can't go by a sound or you can't go by one thing. As you know, you have to go out there and you have to try to get as much information as you can and look for footprints and look for tree twists, hair, any kind of other signs that you can, you know, do. Well, how about going through and letting us know what's going on? You've had some excitement here this week as well, right?
Well, I've been doing some baiting. And this is really the first time. I did a bucket of baiting a year or so ago. And it was all fruit and nothing.
Well, why don't you explain what is baiting? Explain to the people. There's a lot of people on here that are new and don't know some of the terms we use. Explain what baiting is.
Well, I guess us Bigfoot researchers would describe it as putting some type of food product out or even maybe some type of shiny materials or some chimes or something that would make noise and cause interest to the creatures if they are in the area and come over and see.
Mm-hmm. Get their attention to come over and curiosity and get them.
Yeah, then have some trail cameras or something to, you know, possibly catch a picture, which I don't have, so I rely totally on food and hopefully that, you know, they will take the bait, the actual food, I went a step further this time. I actually put sand down, and I've been putting more sand down every few days. I'll add some more bags. I've got a total of 1,000 pounds of sand down now over an area of, 10, 15 square feet. And in the middle of that, I had a bucket. And I had a bucket on a pole. And it was on the ground level. And I found some coon tracks in the sand. And I had found a half-eaten apple. And then some other fruit that was completely missing, you know, no scraps on the ground, including a banana, apple, plum, what have you. And that I find that kind of strange because normally I know a deer didn't get in there because there weren't no deer tracks, but if a coon would get in there, you know, it's bound to leave some scraps behind, you know, especially like in a banana, you know, leave things or whatever. But in any event, at that time, I didn't have a pole set up. I just had a bucket there. The bucket was tipped over, and, you know, pretty much everything was gone. And so then I reinforced it, put it on a pole, and they still got in there. And then I put a bucket on top of a bucket, found some more tracks of the coon, and I think they got in there again. But I don't know for sure. You know, there were some things missing. And then I put a third bucket on top, and by this time I was pretty well convinced that the coon could not scale up these three buckets, and they're kind of at angles and inverted in such a way that, you know, he'd have to be a Houdini raccoon and defeat the, you know, the laws of gravity to get in this thing.
I understand, yeah. Well, raccoons are something. I mean, raccoons and squirrels are probably the most industrious unbelievably, they can do almost anything to get something.
You know, my knowledge on squirrels is that, you know, they're primarily a seed and nut eater. And
yeah.
Even a squirrel could probably get into this thing. But, you know, a squirrel's not going to eat a banana.
Well,
or
I was just referring to them as, yeah, as the kind of animals that, I mean, almost no matter what you try to do to keep them from getting into something, they seem to find a way to be able to get into it.
Right.
Raccoons are the same way. They're real industrious and curious, and they can get into almost anything. The
exactly.
Doggone things are really hard to, you know, well, that's why we try to keep away from the fields and other things like that. It's just almost impossible to do.
So I would think at the time, well, do I either trap the raccoon or keep on working to make it raccoon-proof? You know,
I
finally came to a point where I got it raccoon-proof, and I was finding some more raccoon tracks in the sand. You know, I've been doing this for 14 days now. I found some more raccoon tracks in the sand, but none of the fruit was gone. And, you know, next day, I'd find a couple tracks in the sand, no fruit gone. And then by the third day, after I'm three layers up on the buckets, I didn't find any more raccoon tracks. I went a few more days, and, you know, nothing's happening. And then, I don't know, was it a couple days ago? And I check out in the morning to see, you know, what's changed. I found a huge heel print of, I believe, a creature.
Wow.
On the edge of the perimeter of the sand, it looked like it, you know, it was trying to leap over the sand and just its heel hit the edge of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't cover. I took some pictures of the heel print, and you know, the rest of the foot, you have to use your imagination. It's off into the hard ground.
Yeah, well, it's, you know that it's not a deer. You know, it's, I mean, it's not a bear. I mean, it's a.
I know it wasn't a bear. I know it wasn't a deer. It wasn't a cougar. It definitely wasn't a person because there was no shoe treads. Plus,
right.
The heel went out at such an angle on both sides. It, you know, it wasn't shaped like a person's foot or a person's shoe. So anyway, I took pictures of it. I put my hand down for scale when I took the picture, and then I added more sand. But
oh,
I didn't
wow.
cover up the heel print because Tom's the supposed to be coming out for a visit with his guys, and I wanted them to see it firsthand. So anyway,
sure.
I just put the sand around the heel print and extended it out even further. Well, you know, even though I think that was a creature that jumped across there, there was no fruit gone in the bucket that day. So what I did is Tom said that he or others had used sardines in the past.
Yeah, so peanut butter and sardines.
Yeah, so I opened up a can of sardines, put it in there, put a few fresh things in there, you know, more fresh fruit. And then I tied a banana up on the pole above the buckets, because the top bucket is a huge nursery bucket.
Mm.
And you have to look down there and reach down there to get into the fruit. So I would think even a big creature would have trouble reaching the fruit without stepping in the sand. You know, it's
right.
It's that big of an area that I've covered now. And so I tied a banana up on the pole higher than the bucket so that the banana is real visible. The sardine is down in the bucket with all the other fruit. And I tied it up there with scotch tape, you know, and I think it's going to hold. So I'm hoping that, you know, they'll see the banana visually if they don't smell the sardines. And I'll check tomorrow morning and see if there's any more tracks.
Well, you know, Lee Joyner, who couldn't join us tonight, he was going to talk about their experience in Frost, Texas, and that's where they had the sardine can crunched, the peanut butter jar fingerprint,
mm-hmm.
and that's where David Clare did the imprint on the peanut butter jar. I actually got some fingerprints and stuff from the hand, you know, the dermal ridges and stuff from the hand.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we got a game cam picture also of the hand. And it was all pretty neat. I mean, it's all up on my website on the searchingforbigfoot.com under the expedition for 2011 Frost, Texas.
Right.
But there's when you look at the sardine can, you see how it's crunched. Pretty amazing. And so, I mean, There's some neat stuff that these things can do.
A human wouldn't have been able to do that unless they had a pair of vice grips with them or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, sardine can's not real strong, but it's just the way it's crunched. I mean, a regular human hand can't crunch it like that.
Yeah.
I mean, they can crunch it, but they can't crunch it like that. And wow, I'm telling you, it's something else.
So
you've been pretty busy, just kind of keeping busy all the time there, huh?
Well, I hadn't been doing all that much this year. I kind of was trying to get to know my family again, plus make a little bit of money, and, you know, just get things in order, you know, because I've been so busy for the last 4 years doing research. But you know, when Tom said he was coming out here, I thought, you know, the least I can do is, you know, start actively going out again. And in fact, I went out last night to one of the hot spots, and I believe I had some activity out there. I was listening to audio gear. So I, you know,
get you get noises and stuff like that.
Yeah, I do my investigations differently, I guess, than the traditional Bigfoot researchers that, you know, go out in the field and walk through the woods at night. I try to set up before it gets dark, you know, and I try to go to what I believe are true Bigfoot hotspots. You know, I think we use the term a little bit too loosely when we talk about Bigfoot hotspots, because, I mean, if there are as many creatures as many of us believe there are roaming across the country, I mean, the whole country is a Bigfoot hotspot in a general sense, but when I refer to Bigfoot hotspots, I'm talking about areas that I believe the creatures come to on a regular basis, you know, two or three times a week, or, excuse me, I'm losing my voice a little bit, or nightly, you know, to actually use as a playground, you know, to swing on trees, break trees, bend trees. So I've located five of these over the last 4 years, and I was at one of those last night, and I was set up with some audio equipment and listening, and I heard what I believe were some vocals of the creatures, and well, I guess I can leave it at that for now.
No, I understand. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, what are in some of your hot spots? Now you've had some visuals too, right?
I've had five visuals. Three of them together at one time, right before sunset.
Wow.
The next one was at 7 o'clock in the morning, but it was light outside, and I saw it falling from a tree.
Yeah. Now, can I ask you a question?
Because
we found through our discoveries in different areas that there seems to be different species of these creatures, and they're different, builds, you know what I mean? And in Florida, they've got a couple of different kinds, besides the standard kind. There's a couple different kinds that people have been pretty much, you know, the sightings have revealed. What was yours? What was your sighting like?
I would ask Marco, Bill, in the Florida sightings, do we know for sure that they're different? I mean, maybe some of them were juvenile. And, you know, coloring, you know, looking humans, you know, people live in the northern hemisphere, up way up north. They tend to have lighter hair, blue eyes, green eyes, red blonde hair. And then further south, around the equator, they have dark skin, dark eyes. So, maybe the creatures could follow suit like that. And, you know, if it's a hot climate down south and food isn't quite as plentiful, or they don't need to beef up for winter, maybe they're going to be a little bit lighter built and maybe shorter in stature than the ones that have to roam huge areas of Alaska and Northern California.
Yeah, well, there's some, you know, really big ones, and then there's kind of, normal, almost human-sized ones, a little bigger than a human. Some of them are a little smaller than a human.
But is there a possibility that maybe some of those are juvenile, that they haven't reached?
Oh, no, they could be. We don't know. I'm just going by, you know, many, many different sightings that people have talked about. When they've had, when Tom's been down there on expedition,
found some huge footprints in Florida too. So that,
absolutely. It doesn't mean they're all small. No. I'm just saying, what was yours? What was your experience like? What was
the first three that I saw were I estimate somewhere between 6.5 and 7.5 feet tall, and they were somewhat slender built, but again, it was early spring. I'd have to look it up, maybe March time frame. And if they're like other animals, they might tend to beef up more in the fall to get through the winter, and then and by spring, maybe they've lost a few pounds, you know?
Absolutely. If they're migrating, they'll come down in their skinny, skinny minis.
You know, they might have been teenagers, too, for all I know. And, you know, maybe they have developed the muscle mass and the weight, the bigger ones.
Did you get a close look at any of the faces or any of that? Or did you see
No, I didn't. First three that I saw, I was driving. I was in the back seat, actually. My wife and my daughter were driving in the front seat and going down the road, and it was in a one of those park systems over here on the East Coast. And I was looking out the window, and I happened to see the three creatures, and I thought they were three men. And I was watching them, and I, you know, it was awful strange because, you know, I was wondering, and this was going by fast because we're driving down the road, and but it seemed like everything was in slow motion to me, and your mind tries to analyze and process data that doesn't seem to make sense, and they're all black, and I'm thinking, why are these three men all dressed in black, you know?
Yeah, I know.
And
you're trying to decipher what your eyes are seeing, yeah, I know.
Yeah, look closer, as I'm looking closer, I'm wait a minute, you know, head, neck, hands, arms, no clothing line anywhere where there's breaks, you know, everything's black all the way down to the feet. But it was far enough away to where I couldn't see toes, I couldn't see face, even though at least one of them was looking towards my direction. I could see head, I could see arms, I could see they were standing upright, and I could see they were swinging arms. I knew they weren't black bear, you know. And, and they were standing next to a bale of hay, and those things are huge. And I'm not a tall guy. I'm 5'7". I went back there the next day, and the bale of hay came up to the top of my chest, but on them it came up to their abdomen.
So they're fairly big, yeah.
A little perspective, that's why I guess they were somewhere in the neighborhood of 6.5 to 7.5 feet.
Yeah.
Now the next one I saw falling from
a tree. We're getting towards the end here. You got about a minute.
Yeah, to cut me off whenever. Have a minute?
You just go ahead. We'll finish up and then.
Okay. The next one was I'm guessing about chimpanzee size. It was definitely a small one.
Yeah.
It was fairly far away up in a pine tree. Fell from the tree. Last one I saw was in pitch black darkness. Something got my attention to turn around. I don't think it was a noise, but I looked around, and it was about 50 feet away, and I could see it, you know, doing one of those peek-a-bobs around a big oak tree. And I estimate that one, I don't know, somewhere between 7 and 9 feet tall. And that one, I could just see a shadow figure, and it took off actually down a driveway, and it was gone.
Wow.
I think it realized that I was seeing it. So anyway,
I got it. Well, Jack, thanks so much for coming on tonight. Finally, we got you a little more than 5 minutes, and we'll keep it open too. You're going to keep. I'm sure you're going to keep going here. We'll probably have you on next week again just to go over what happened when Tom got there.
Okay.
And when he gets there and everything, and we'll see what happens.
Thank you so much. All right, thanks for having me.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, comes time to close another show. Sorry Tom had to drop off the line, but his phones weren't working right. I apologize for the chat room, my friends. I'll try to get something going here during the weekend and email all of you to try to get you a better way to get in there and get everything fixed up. We'll see you all next week, and keep Bigfooting, and keep everything going great. Good night, everybody.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they hold and a promise to the day that they die. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monster, mystery, legend, tales, and facts.